up your game with Beer Hunter. Choose from over 300 craft beers from around the world, delivered direct to your door. They've even been kind enough to give you guys a Raising the Bar discount code to give you 10% off your first order. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy the episode. Andy, welcome to A Raising the Bar. Thank you very much for coming on.
My pleasure. I'm psyched to be with you and finally meet you in person.
Absolutely. We've been talking for about a month now, haven't we? So yeah. It's pretty crazy seeing you in the flesh.
This strange world of COVID, right?
Absolutely.
All about Zoom calls.
Absolutely.
When COVID clears up, you think Zoom will still be in existence? I hope not.
I'm working from home all the time now, so I think it will be. I honestly think it will be.
Well, that's true. I mean, the virtual world. And for me, I should say, I hope that it's still going because of the world of sustainability. Mm. And so, you know, if you can actually appear at a large conference but not be flying around the world and reducing your carbon footprint, it does help. But there's nothing like being together in person.
Yeah, agreed. And it's something I think we probably all missed over the past 18 months, 2 years, isn't it? It's been a pretty crazy period, let's be honest.
Yeah, try being an event planner.
Oh, no, I don't. Well, I'm sure we'll get onto that. Yeah. How was Scotland anyway? Enjoy Scotland.
Scotland was amazing. It was a long time coming because Craig and I have been together for almost 3 years and I hadn't met his family or any of his friends. And we got into lockdown shortly after we got together. Mm. So this was our first opportunity. And the Scots, you know, they know how to do it. They can drink you under the table.
I can imagine.
And very kind and lots of fun. So we had a very special week.
Amazing. Good. Well, it's great to have you over here. Thank you for coming on again. But I mean, you're obviously here in the UK, but everyone knows you for one thing, and it's Fyre Festival. And there was a period during lockdown, probably the last year, where the only thing that UK citizens did was watch Tiger King and Fyre Festival. So I guess, how did you get into the whole Fyre Festival event planning?
Oh, boy. Let's see. So Billy McFarlane, the wonderful Billy, who, as you know, is in prison.
Of course.
Billy grew up in a town very close to where I grew up.
Okay, yeah.
And I knew his family, and Billy was starting a company a few years ago in New York City called Magnesis, which was a black credit card.
I remember it,
for 20-somethings that basically you swiped your Barclays Bank debit card onto this card, which was this thick metal card that made you feel very, very important and very, very impressive. And I met with Billy, and it was all about like having these incredible concierge perks and giving young people the ability to network and meet new people and go to cool events and get discounts and get into the best clubs and the best restaurants. And a friend of mine called me and said, you know, you need to meet this kid, Billy McFarlane. He's starting this company. His primary focus is trying to do all these amazing concierge services. And so in 1994, I was featured on the front page of the Wall Street Journal with my dot matrix picture as America's first corporate concierge. And
amazing.
I developed this concept to help corporate employees balance their work lives by making them more productive and happier at home, supplying a concierge service that would do all the shit that you didn't want to do. Find a plumber, need a babysitter, looking for a dog walker, who's going to paint my house, where do we go for an anniversary? We want to go on holiday and don't know where to go or how to book it, you know. And so I created a department that would do your to-do list, and it became very popular. So it went across the wire at that point. This is before social media.
Yeah,
so
of course.
There I'm on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the New York Post. Headlines were at Pepsi, he's the right one. Because I launched it at Pepsi's world headquarters.
That's incredible.
And then I was on Dateline and the Today Show and all these morning and all these news programs and on.
What an experience.
It was pretty incredible. But and if you read the Wall Street Journal or read the Times, you probably know who Andy King was at that time. But it didn't go viral around the world, though people knew who I was. So this is a buddy of mine who called and said, listen, Billy needs your expertise on this concierge stuff. So I met with Billy, and he made me a board member of his company.
Okay.
And I hosted 44 events for him for free to help him launch this concept, where he went from like 300 members for his credit card to like 14,000, which was a pretty incredible jump. But I helped him find a brownstone, hire a butler, and we did chef's dinners, art openings, music performances, trunk shows. We booked out nightclubs. We created a lot of cool experiences for a lot of young kids, which is amazing. So, and there were a few different situations that occurred that might have appeared a little bit shady, maybe, but I just thought, you know, he's young, he doesn't know, you know, it's all, your life builds with experiences. And when he came to me to talk about FIRE, he said, I've just developed this cool app and you can book famous performers and musicians on your phone.
Yeah.
And you don't have to go through agents and managers because me as an event planner, my life is tied up with agents and managers and that kind of a thing, always trying to do a booking to get someone to perform. And the amount of money that is spent on that level throws your budget completely. When you're like, we have a $500,000 to spend, and the next thing you know, it's $1,000,002 because you're paying the agent, you're paying the manager, you're blah, 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 blah. So I said, Billy, this sounds like a great concept. And Billy decided that he wanted to do the official launch for the app in the Bahamas, in the form of a music festival.
Okay.
And so I was not part of the preliminary planning. I was, the original planning I was doing was for a investors, I don't know what we call them, but where he was trying to attract sponsors. And so we were going to hold like a sponsor night in New York City, where you arrived and you felt like you were in a 1960s airport lounge. And then there were 1960s stewardesses coming out with short dresses and passing drinks. And then you went into another room and you, it was like an aquarium and it was filled with fish and something. We were serving seafood.
Incredible.
And then there were, but he was trying to create this amazing experience, which is what he wanted people to picture. What it would be like to go to the world's first luxury music festival in the Bahamas.
Okay.
And he decided that, I don't know, after about a month of doing some preliminary initial planning, that they were going to hold off on doing the sponsor thing because they had gained a lot of sponsorship already without even having to host that event in New York.
I heard that there was, with FIRE Festival, there was some investors in Coachella. They were actually trying to pull out and reinvest into FIRE Festival. That's how popular it got at one point. Was that correct?
Absolutely.
That's crazy, isn't it?
That was amazing. I mean, the whole, and you know, it's so controversial for me and for the world to talk about, but like, it's now a Harvard case study, you know, where from, I mean, it's the power of social media. Right? Think about it, Connor. It's like, the orange tile and getting all these celebrities to post all at the same time. The festival sold out in minutes. And then think about what took the festival down. The fucking cheese sandwich. That cheese sandwich. Don't even get me on the topic of that cheese sandwich, which I created. And that when I saw, you know, the we'll do a quick story. So basically, the world was falling apart at that point. Well, at least the world of FIRE. And anything that could go wrong went wrong. And there was, you know, at the end of the day, there was no infrastructure to host a high-end luxury music festival on a small island in the Bahamas. No plumbing, no electricity, nowhere for anybody to stay. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And so we were trying to do something that was basically impossible. But we felt like we could pull it off. Now, I was only given 6 weeks to make this happen.
And you said it's like 12 months or something, isn't it?
Normally, you better have at least 12 months. I mean, not at least nine, but hopefully 12 months to plan a music festival properly.
Six weeks?
No. And so, but I'm like, you know what? Hey, what the hell? I'm going to just, I flew down and I basically met with the team and I said, we will make this happen if we all agree upon one thing. We need to change the messaging. This isn't a luxury music festival anymore. It's a really cool music festival in the Bahamas. I guess the basic admittance price was $1,200 And that was like a jet that brings you over, not quite private, but from Miami to the Bahamas, and a place to sleep for 3 nights, and basic food, and great music. It's a pretty damn good deal.
I mean, that's good value for money in my eyes.
Yeah. But, you know, unfortunately, a lot went wrong. Mm. And so when the final nail in the coffin for us really was a storm that came through about 36 hours before the first guests were due to arrive, and it blew 80 miles an hour, and it poured rain sideways, and most of the village that we were building was ruined, and the tents blew over, and the beds were soaked, and it was a nightmare.
What were the chances of that happening, by the way? Because it hadn't been anywhere near that up until the actual day before the festival.
It wasn't even on our radar screen. We just
Do you think it could have gone ahead if
absolutely
okay if it didn't rain that bad?
Absolutely. Okay. It still would never have been as perfect as Billy has had publicized, but think about it, Connor. You're down there with your girlfriend. Mm-hmm. You're in your bathing suit. She's in her bikini. Mm-hmm. You're eating mahi-mahi and drinking, you know, Whispering Angel Rosé or Casamigos tequila.
Yep.
And you've got Blink 182 performing on stage, and it's a beautiful day. You guys are thrilled. You're like, shit, we're in a beautiful island in the Bahamas.
Mm.
Well, as you know, as the story goes, everything went wrong. So, of course, the guests arrive, and only 600. We stopped the jets at about 600 guests out of the 3,000 or so that were supposed to come on the first weekend.
Yeah.
And so we sent them, as you all know, to Exuma Point, which is a resort around the corner. Marianne, who ended up raising a lot of money for another topic.
Mm-hmm.
And so Exuma Point did anything they could to make these kids happy all day long, which included a lot of booze and liquor.
Yeah.
So they all got basically drunk. When they arrived at the village, they were bombed. Mm-hmm. And so they pulled in, as you know, and not a luxury coach at all, but an old school bus.
Yep.
And all their luggage was being delivered by another vehicle from the airport.
Yep.
And they were staggering around. And I just saw two kids, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And I said, you guys need to eat something. And literally, like, the boy was bombed. The girlfriend looked like she was about to throw up. I'm like, listen, go over there. That is the employee food tent next to the main tent. And Max is the chef who works for me. Tell him Andy suggested you come over and he'll make you guys a sandwich. We're serving dinner in a couple hours.
Yeah.
But you guys should eat something now. They're like, okay, thanks. Yeah. Like, oh my word. So they stagger over.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, boom, I see two more kids.
Yeah.
Bombed. One of them was throwing up. I'm like, guys, you need to eat something. Like, this is a liability. I can't have, like, everybody's completely bombed and dying of alcohol poisoning with nothing to eat before any of the music happens. And so I say the same thing. Max, over there, employee tent, he'll make you a sandwich.
Mm.
And so they go over. Next thing you know, one of my employees happens to back over with a Jeep, the main water line. There's a geyser shooting up 1,000 feet in the air. It's a nightmare.
No.
And I am just trying to put out that fire, talking about fires. And I glance over, and they're like 500 kids in line for the fucking cheese sandwich. And I'm like, oh, no.
Shit.
That is not, I say to some of my employees, get over there and tell them that is not dinner.
Yeah.
Dinner is going to be steaks on the grill and jumbo shrimp and fresh fish and chicken breasts and, you know, cool food that we have 24 chefs making in the big tent next door.
Yeah.
And I said, that is not their dinner. Don't even. And then, of course, boom, I look over and you can see it. Out come the smartphones and they're videoing and taking pictures of this sandwich. And I mean, as you know, Connor, within 1 minute, it went viral around the world.
That's incredible. Boom. That's incredible.
Scam, fraud, nothing, blah, 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 luxury, you know. And that was the first kind of indication that nothing was going to, that the whole thing was falling apart, because the managers of most of the big acts saw it immediately and started calling to cancel. And guess what? They were all 10 minutes away on Nassau in the Bahamas, staying at a beautiful resort. They just had to jump on a little plane, fly 10 minutes and play 10 songs and come back. The stage, I mean, almost a $2 million stage that Luca, our main man from Italy, built, which was beautiful. Everything was in place for them to start performing. So a lot of the components, obviously, as you know, weren't in place.
Yeah.
But there was enough
yeah.
that if the messaging had gone out properly to say, hey, we would have potentially lost 10 or 15% of the attendees. Everybody else would go, what the hell? Shit, we're going to the Bahamas for Pete's sake.
Paid for it, might as well go now. Yeah, yeah. Of course.
So it is the cheese sandwich. There it is, that wonderful social media. But that was the massive success of the promoting of the festival and then the massive unsuccess of the demise social media.
So how has it changed? Because obviously you've had Andy King events for what, plus 20 years now maybe. How has it changed in terms of promoting an event? Because you've got social media now and it is so easy to do so. If you nail it, like you say, the burnt orange tile that obviously was sent out, absolutely, you know, that made Fyre Festival what it was initially. How was it back in the day when social media wasn't a thing? How did you go about promoting events?
Boy, well, it was a lot of word of mouth, but it was also booking the right talent that had a big following.
Okay.
And that was really half of the battle, you know. And if you, I mean, let's just say the Rolling Stones weren't that hard for me to promote. And
yeah, of course. Yeah.
That's a whole nother crazy story of doing, you know, at a major event for the Rolling Stones when they came to New York in 1998, maybe. It could have been 97 or 98.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, no problem in selling tickets there. I think it was more like some of the new kinds of concepts where, how did you get creative if no one knew about it already? Like Fyre. But word of mouth, and it was heavy advertising back then. And so, you know, and I think in producing a music festival today, I'm just going to throw out a number, but a number that I've often used for some of the major music festivals is about $4 million in marketing and promoting.
Jesus Christ. So it's a big chunk.
Big chunk.
How much did Fyre Festival cost altogether?
Well, we were in at about 26 million.
Okay. And is that over budget compared to other events?
Yes.
Yeah. By a lot.
By a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't mean you can't, you know, spend that kind of money on a big event. It can go quickly.
Yeah.
One of the challenges, as you know, from just the visuals of what everybody saw about Fyre with Billy was, you know, private jet after private jet after private jet. And then all the models. And I mean, Billy flew down to the Bahamas from New York probably 30 times or more to go down there and try to find his locations and take over resorts and invite famous people to come with him. And, you know, he made it an event before it was an event.
Yeah.
And the promoting of it. You know, he did a lot of video shooting, trying to capture, you know, beautiful people doing beautiful things.
I mean, yeah, I mean, Hailey Baldwin was involved. You had Bella Hadid. You had all sorts of people. And it was on Pablo Escobar's island at the time, wasn't it? So was it? There was a first island it was originally on, and then it changed, didn't it? What happened there?
Well, so Billy called me, and he's like, oh, Andy, you know, I'm hosting this music festival in the Bahamas,
and
I've bought Pablo Escobar's island.
Okay.
I'm like, wow.
How can you turn that down? You can't turn it down to get involved in something like this.
No, I'm like, oh, my gosh, only Billy. And I said, why Pablo's island? Because, of course, I knew the island. And he said, because it has the largest private landing strip in the world.
Wow, okay.
And why do you think that?
Yeah.
Drug deal after drug deal. Of course, he had these big planes coming in and out.
Well, the documentary highlighted quite a lot of those planes in the sea that had literally crashed into the sea.
So. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And so, unfortunately, as Billy often would do, he wasn't probably going through the right. He was working with like Pablo's lawyer's family. As it turns out, like one of Pablo's lawyers was in control of the island, and Billy never got full. A full go-ahead.
Yeah.
And so he finally got to a point where a lot of the production team he was working with initially was like, Billy, we can't do it here. It's not enough. There's not enough infrastructure. And that's when he brought it over to the larger island of Exuma.
Yeah.
And but even there, with more infrastructure, it still wasn't enough to make it work properly and to have it be as luxury oriented as he wanted it to be.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it? Because it had everything going for it. Everything, if everything had fallen into place, that could have been the greatest event of all time.
Well, yeah, and think about it, Connor. In a lot of our discussions with meeting after meeting every day planning this thing, we were basing our future on, wow, this is going to be a huge success. The world will not stop talking about it. And we will host one a year in Ibiza, one a year on Mykonos, one a year, and we'd pick maybe 10 locations.
Yeah, yeah.
And people would move about the year to follow fire of where would it be next. But, you know, it was a big dream for Billy and not a realistic one when it came to really the scope of what it would take to make everything happen.
It must have been difficult because I think he was referenced a lot in the documentary that he's the best salesman of all time. So when he's so positive and isn't I don't know, put down by anything going wrong, it must be quite hard to think, actually, am I just being overly cautious here? You know, is it actually going to go ahead and, you know, is everything going to fall into place? But I guess, was at any point or during the organization of it, were you thinking we were overspending? Because I think he gave, I think it was Kendall Jenner, something like $250,000 for just to post that Instagram title. But did you think at any point, right, okay, no, I'm gone, we're overspending here?
Absolutely. But Connor, one of the things that's good for the world to know is that Billy controlled the money completely from his laptop and his iPad.
I think that comes across in the documentary.
So none of us were really completely... Yeah. We knew numbers at times and we're like, Jesus, Billy, what are you doing now? What? I'm like, all right. I mean, you have a business plan here and who am I to get in the way of it? You're hiring me as a producer, which, by the way, I never even got a signed contract and never got paid a penny and ended
up... That's
a
shame. That's annoying.
Oh, yeah. And I think, you know, one of the fascinating things is that when Billy initially called me to come and save him, I was hosting the World Cup Pro-Am Ski Championships in Squaw Valley in Northern California.
Nice.
And unlike most ski championships, we had a big problem, which was we had too much snow.
Okay.
Not too little snow, too much. So there were avalanches, and then we were trying to get all the snow off the slopes, and the only place they could take it to were the parking lots. But then we had 140,000 people coming with nowhere to park.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, it was just one thing after another. So in the middle of all of this shit, Billy calls us. Where are you? I'm like, I'm in Squaw Valley. He's like, oh. I said, what's happening? He said, well, I need you in the Bahamas, and and I'd like to send a jet to pick you up. I'm like, shit. Do you know what a jet costs to fly from... A private jet from San Francisco to the Bahamas going all the way across the United States. I said, that's a good 25 grand or 30 grand. Shit. I said, all right, well, obviously Billy's got something going here and he's doing it right. And so I agreed at that point to go. And, you know, it was in hindsight, no one was completely aware of what he was doing as far as the investments were concerned or the fundraising. But at the end of the day, Billy went to every big investor himself and made the pitch and brought back the money.
That's impressive.
And it wasn't. And I'm thinking, the kid's 25. How old was he then? Yeah. 24, 25 years old. I'm like, kid's 25 years old. This is pretty incredible. Look at the chutzpah, like the balls that this kid has to do that. Because, at the you know, Billy's kind of socially awkward.
Okay.
He's a little bit weird.
Okay.
Kind of a little... he was in university for 1 year and then left.
Okay.
And so, I don't know. Is Mark Zuckerberg still a little socially awkward too? I think so. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think anyone like that has got to be a little bit socially awkward to be able to put the mindset to something like that. I couldn't do it. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean. When you're having a conversation with someone like that, you do think, a little bit off.
But he raised the money, Connor. That's what's amazing. He did raise the money, but then...
Continually as well, over and over again. Every time you were backed into a corner, he'd go out, private jet somewhere, bring more cash in.
I'm like, Billy, we got a problem. We got to pay for this, this, and this. Yeah. I'll be back tomorrow. I'm going to New York tonight. I'll be back tomorrow.
That's
like,
crazy.
Oh, okay,
that's
well.
Crazy.
And, you know, I think if you look at it from a... I mean, we had a discussion a couple of weeks ago with a big group about being successful entrepreneurs, you know. I got criticized by calling Billy an entrepreneur, that he really is more of a sociopath than a thief. But he has some pretty incredible entrepreneurial skills where he knows how to think out of the box.
Absolutely.
Right? In this day and age, that's handy. But, you know, he is where he is today. Mm. He's in prison for a reason.
Mm. He did a podcast recently from prison and got sent to solitary confinement for doing it.
What a nightmare.
I know, yeah. When was the last time you spoke to him? Have you spoken to him recently? Yeah?
I had not spoken to him in over a year.
Yeah.
So prior to him being moved. Because you heard that he was moved the first time because he got someone to smuggle in a recording device.
Right, okay.
And that he was secretly recording Michael Cohen.
Okay, yeah.
Trump's lawyer and situation from the Jersey Shore. And apparently they were all hanging out and he'd get them to tell stories while they were, I don't know what, playing basketball or checkers or chess or something.
That's a pretty crazy combination of people, that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I guess he was taking explicit notes, because he was writing a memoir.
Mm.
And he got caught. And that's when he got sent from New York to Ohio. And then, of course... Jeez. The whole mishap with the podcast, because there he was, you know, you see it in the movies, like,
yeah,
Billy, you have a visitor, you know, and he goes up to the glass booth and he sits there with a microphone and they talk back and forth and on, but no one knew that he was actually
recording
a podcast from the booth. Now, if he'd been transparent about it, maybe he could have.
Yeah, potentially, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But no.
He's got a lot of guts, I'll tell you that. I mean, I kind of do take my hat off to him in some ways, because what he did, I know he obviously extorted a lot of people in the end, but it was a very, very intelligent mindset to be able to manipulate that amount of people, to be honest.
And raise 26 million bucks.
Yeah, and raise 26 million cash.
Yeah, he's got to have some money buried somewhere.
Jesus. Well, talking about the situation, you must have met some pretty famous people during your years as an event planner. I think you mentioned on Al Casey's podcast that you've done one for Leo DiCaprio in the past, haven't you?
Yes.
Wow. Have you got a favorite person you've worked with?
I love Mark Ruffalo.
Okay. Yeah.
And so Mark, like Leo, they're kind of two big actors in Hollywood that are a voice for climate change and for what we can do to help this planet.
Mm.
And Leo is kind of the main one. Now Mark's coming up the ranks now, and so I helped Mark Ruffalo launch a charity a few years ago called the Solutions Project, where he wants to see a solar panel on every roof, an electric car in every driveway, a wind turbine, a cistern for water.
Yeah,
you know, he wants to see the world embracing 100% renewable energy by 2030. I mean, that's coming soon.
Yeah, it is.
Unless it was 2050, but I'm pretty sure it's 2030.
I think it will be.
And so it's one day at a time. But Mark is inspiring, and he's kind of the real McCoy, you know. Mm. Like, he drives a Prius. He has a farm north of New York City.
Yeah.
He, you know, you're not seeing him on a lot of super yachts.
Yeah, and private jets.
And getting off of private jets and that kind of thing. But Leo's done amazing work.
Yeah.
Amazing to be the voice of you don't want to say the voice of doom. We are doomed a little bit, but we have COP26 is coming up next week in Glasgow, right? So hopefully we're going to have some good news about what the world's doing to try to save the planet.
Indeed.
But Mark was pretty amazing to work with.
Wow.
So kind.
Wow.
And, you know, there's some crazy ones out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you name any?
Hollywood's kind of crazy.
I can imagine. Well, what's your view on the obviously, because sustainability is a massive thing, and that's what you're in London for, isn't it, right now? You've got an event. But what's your view on the space race at the moment? You know, these billionaires going into space. What are you thinking about that?
I mean, it's a two-edged sword, you'd say, right? Or a two-sided coin. I mean, some will say the amount of money that Richard Branson is spending, he could solve world hunger.
Yeah.
He could feed everybody that's starving in the world.
Yeah.
On the other hand, if there is another world out there and we're destroying the one we have, and we all need another place to be able to go.
It's worth putting some money into it.
Exactly. Yeah, so, I mean, who's to say? I don't, you know, technology's amazing.
I know.
And, you know, are there other life forms out there? Yeah, there are.
It's going to be.
Where are they living? And can we find a planet that's got water on it
mm.
and vegetation? Wow, then maybe who knows? We start this whole thing again.
Yeah.
But I do struggle with, you know, what people are paying $250,000 to grab a seat to go up for how many minutes and come back. And I'm like, you know, there are, you know, from homeless populations to hunger to, you know, famine to everything that's going on in, you know, these forests today and throughout South America and Antarctica. I mean, all these climate challenges, there's a lot of places to funnel money.
Yeah, there is. I mean, Elon Musk was talking about it, and he was saying, look, if there's 1% of the amount of cash that's raised, you know, throughout the world that's put into intergalactic travel, why not? We're fucking this planet up, so let's go and see what's out there, kind of thing. Because he puts plenty of money into other things, and, you know, a lot of other people do, but I'm under the mindset that it's probably worth exploring it a little bit, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Without a doubt.
I don't think I'm booking a flight anytime soon.
No, but I'd be too nervous, I think, you know.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I don't. And then are they saying that, wait, what's his name from?
Which one?
From Amazon? Star Trek?
Oh yeah, he went up there, you know.
Did he go at 90 years old?
Yeah, he went up there. What's he called? No,
Stratner.
William Shatner.
William Shatner.
Yeah, he went up there, yeah. He went with Jeff Bezos, so you've got Amazon, Richard Branson, and Elon Musk, so it's like a three-way thing between them. But yeah, he went up 90 years old. He doesn't look 90, by the way.
He doesn't.
No, not at all. Not at all. That's mental.
Much. Well, good for him.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, I've got a hard enough time going to the grocery store. going to another planet would be a whole other deal.
Do you get spotted a lot when you're out and about? Probably not so much where you are now at home, but coming over here, have you had anything yet?
Just a couple people today, you know, a couple on the train, a few people in the restaurant.
Mm.
It's so funny because they'll kind of, I mean, timing was interesting. So, as you may know, Chris Smith is a very talented director. Mm. So Chris did Fire. And then
did Tiger King as well, didn't
he? And he did Tiger King as well. Yeah. So I was kind of replaced pretty quickly by Carol Baskins.
Okay.
That bitch.
Hey, all you cool cats and kittens.
Oh my God, you cool cats and kittens. It's enough to kill me. Oh my word, she killed her husband and you know it.
She definitely did.
He's buried in the back lawn. So, you know, COVID hit, and that's probably one of the challenges that hit a lot of people. I was very lucky to star in the documentary and rise to fame very quickly.
Yep.
I dedicated almost 2 years to flying around the world, to raising money and awareness, to drive funds, to two GoFundMes to pay back everybody in the Bahamas.
Yep.
And I'm pretty proud of the amount of money that I was able to raise. I mean, almost $500,000 and it was just through simple ways of speaking to different groups, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But then I was offered 8 different television shows.
Wow.
And
really?
We accepted one deal. Mm. We shot a pilot.
Mm.
And the premise of the show is me flying around the world, saving events that are going wrong.
Really?
Mm-hmm. That was pretty...
I'd watch that.
Oh, man, it was pretty crazy. So we shot one show and literally edited it. And I mean, in a few weeks, COVID hit.
Oh,
and of
shit.
Course, where is Andy King flying right now? Nowhere with COVID.
Mm.
And of course, what big events is he saving? And none because of COVID.
Mm.
And so that concept's still a little bit on hold.
But it could still go ahead, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll still go ahead. But there's other things in the fire, excuse my French.
Okay.
Or, you know,
interesting.
Excuse the pun. but it's you know, for a period of time, wherever I would go, cars pull over, people are screaming on the side of the street.
Mm.
That is the power of the reach of Netflix.
How many homes did it go into? 80 million?
I think so. Yeah, 80 million homes. Can you imagine around the world?
Your face has been seen 80 million times.
And they're like, I think I know that guy.
Yeah.
Are you the...
Like,
We were somewhere last week, and a girl came up. She was taking tickets for a big sporting event. She said, you're Andy King, aren't you? And I said, yeah, thank you. And she said, oh, we just want to thank you for attending some of our matches here. Appreciative. I said, oh, great.
Great.
And then I went up to the snack bar to get something to eat. Mm. The guy behind the snack bar was like, are you that guy from Netflix?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for supporting. Like, oh my word. I guess it hasn't worn off completely.
That's incredible. I mean, well, there's a certain point. There's probably a reason why you are so famous. And when I was watching the documentary, I was like, this is incredible. This is fucking mental. And then it just went up a notch. And obviously it was the famous defining moment, I'd like to call it. So there was an incident where obviously the Evian water was being held by people or whatever.
Customs,
there you go. And I think they wanted something like $175,000 to be able to release it. And I mean, Billy obviously wanted you to take one for the team.
Our
beautiful gay leader, he said, you know, if you suck Cunningham's dick, you've saved the fire festival. And at that moment, I was like, this is mad. I was like, what's just happened here? What? I mean, you became a meme. How the hell did you approach and handle all that stuff? Because I think you've handled it phenomenally well, to be honest.
Well, think about it. So first of all, here's the irony. Like, I run a zero waste event business.
Yeah.
And I don't allow plastic at any of my events.
Yeah.
And the fact that I was going to go suck the biggest dick in the Bahamas, I think, you know, to free up 200,000 plastic water bottles that I would never allow at any event was crazy.
Mm.
But at that point, can you imagine, Connor? I mean, we've been working day and night for 5 weeks, 24 hours a day, trying to make the impossible happen.
Mm.
And when he finally said, will you go suck Brian Cunningham's dick? I thought he was kidding.
I'm
like, oh, come on, Billy. He's like, I said, you're kidding, right? No, I'm not kidding. I'm like, really? I said, can we talk about this? He said, sure, you know, come on over to the house. I just want to, I'm like, you're serious.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, you know, it wasn't like he said, go find 9 vaginas and sleep with them. Like, that would be a problem for a gay man. Like, I'm not sure I could pull it off.
Yeah.
One big dick, I can handle it. And I think that I could probably do it and get it done with. And if I could save the festival with one blowjob, God bless me, right? Just get it done. I'm not going to talk about it, and I'm not going to bitch about it. But then, of course, as Ellen DeGeneres says, you know, well, Andy, congratulations, because you told 80 million homes around the world. I'm like, well, my dad always said, no one ever watches documentaries, and they don't make any money. Ha, ha, ha. Not Fire, obviously, one of Netflix's top producing documentaries in history.
Yeah.
Isn't that incredible?
Jesus.
And then I never got paid a dime.
What, not even from Netflix?
No.
What? I thought you'd definitely get some royalties or something like that.
Nothing. I agreed to do it, Connor, for free to pay back the people in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
I was trying to create a vehicle to tell the true story so that people might give a little money here and there to help me out. And I never got paid a penny.
Mm.
And then the sad thing is that I'm probably one of the only few. And I had called like everybody I worked with.
Yeah.
And I said, and several of them participated in the documentary.
Mm.
And then only to find out later that most of them got paid.
Really?
Yeah.
Who paid them?
I don't know.
Fuck.
And I don't want to know.
Mm. That's annoying.
Well, you know what? Good for them to be ballsy enough to say, hey, you want me in here? You want to tell a story? Let's just say that even if Netflix made 5 cents on every stream, 80 million. What's 80 million times 5?
Fucking hell. Yeah, it's a lot of cash.
Please.
It's a lot of
cash. They made a lot more than 5 cents.
Yeah.
And that part's a little bit hard to swallow.
Yeah.
Excuse the pun for blowjobs. But anyway.
I just smirked that as well.
Let me delete that one. But anyway.
Brilliant.
That's the funniest part of the blowjob story is that I went through 8 hours of interviews with Netflix and I was exhausted. And then finally, Chris said, think we got enough content. This is great. Andy, you've been amazing.
Yeah.
You know, pour yourself a drink. I'm like, oh my God, thank God.
Mm.
And so they took down one light, another light, and one camera went away, another camera. And then I just said, well, Chris, you know, I should tell you one last little story now that we're not on camera.
Was that story?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So I told the blowjob story when I thought all cameras were gone, mics are off. But Chris is like, wait a minute. This is sometimes where you get the best footage.
Yeah, yeah, when you're more natural and relaxed.
Yeah,
and
when people are like, oh, phew, I'm over this shit. Let me just say what I fucking wanted to say anyway, because no one's going to hear it now.
Mad. So that was so close to not being a thing.
Oh, my gosh. I tell the story, and then I get a call like 1 or 2 days later, and they're like, oh, my God, Andy, you rocked it, and you were amazing.
Okay, great.
I had spoken to a business partner of mine and one of my lawyers, and I said to them, you know, I told the blowjob story, and they said, you did not, Andy. No, 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 no. You need to call them immediately and tell them. If they've taped it, or you know, if you're on camera, they need to delete it.
Right,
because that will ruin your career. Absolutely ruin it. And I said, oh, well, okay. You know, so I called Chris. I'm like, Chris, he said, Andy, we can't pull that. There's no way.
Yeah.
What it demonstrated, as you know, is like just how crazy it got. Like, here is a prominent New York City event planner who's been in the business for 30 years. It got so fucking crazy that he was going to be willing to do a blowjob to save a music festival. Mm. Wow. And so apparently Chris explained to me in that fashion the reasoning of keeping it in. But what he also explained is that, think about the documentary, it is so fucking intense. It's just like, oh my God, I'm gonna kill myself, and then boom, Andy King does his part. You're like, what the fuck did he just say?
Exactly.
And then you go back to the craziness. And so he's like, Andy, you can't pull it. You are like this crescendo that is like the best part of the song. Like, we can't pull that. And I'm like, but what he did say, which was nice, is that the way I said it was so calm. And it wasn't, you know, I'm not trying to be like stereotypical, but you know, a lot of my gay peers would go, oh my God, you go, girl. And then you know what else he had, you know.
Yeah.
I don't talk that way. I never will. But that I just kind of said it matter-of-factly. And so I wasn't theatrical. I wasn't weird or crazy about it.
Yeah.
And so
I think that's why it's probably so hard-hitting, you know. I think that's why it was hard-hitting.
And Chris basically said, Andy, that just, the delivery was a winner.
Yeah, yeah.
And so who would have thought, you know, after a 30-year career as being a successful event planner, that I become known as the blowjob king around the world. I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. This was not my plan. But at the end of the day,
it's not ruined your career, has it?
No. And what do you do, Connor? I mean, I suddenly become famous overnight. And what's the next step? I'm like, well, I'm going to drive positive change. Yeah. I'm going to use my platform to try to promote positivity through social media.
Absolutely.
And
you are doing it, which, again, hats off to you. You're doing a very good job at it. So
slowly but surely, you know, and obviously COVID's been a challenge with that too. And when I make the next big announcement, which you'll hear one of these days about another big something, could be a festival, that, you know, I'll trend very high for a while, and that I'm sure I will gain millions of followers. And with that platform, hopefully, I will remind cool people, young people, any people, to make good decisions and better choices. And whether it's about like where you go, what you do, who you're hanging with, what do you wear, what do you eat, you know, from a sustainability perspective, I feel like I can help. I mean, I'm sure, Connor, you're too young, but sometimes you got to sit back and go, what do I want my fucking legacy to be?
Yeah.
Like when I'm dead and gone.
Yeah.
Do you want people to go, oh, Connor drove the coolest car? And no. Like, Connor was a cool guy. What did he do? He did this, this, and this. He helped all these different groups. He became successful at something, and then he, you know. And you kind of want your legacy to be built on something nice.
It's a mindset that you need when you want to do something like you are doing. So, again, keep it up. I think that's probably a good place to try some beer now. What do you reckon?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Time, ladies and gentlemen.
So, Andy, we're going to play a game called Daft or Craft. So, there's three craft beer names. Two of them are real. One's been made up by me. It's on you to think of which one I've made up, basically.
Okay.
And then we'll try them, we'll taste them, we'll rate them out of 10, okay?
Okay.
The first one, Chip off the Old Bock. The second one.
Wait, Chip off the Old
Bock. B-O-C-K.
Bock. Okay, Bock. Okay.
Flavor by fermentation. Merck Life Balance. So I'm going to repeat them one more time, Andy. You've got chip off the old bock, flavor by fermentation, or Merc Life Balance. Which one's been made up by me, mate?
I think from tape. How do you say it?
Flavor by fermentation.
Flavor by fermentation.
Okay, so I'll chip off the old bock, flavor by fermentation, or Merc Life Balance. You're going for flavor by fermentation.
I am. I mean, who would buy that brand? I don't know. I mean, it sounds like a science experiment. Tell me it's not true.
Are you locking that answer in?
I'm locking that in.
You locked it in. Andy, I can tell you, my friend. Incorrect. Flavor by fermentation is right here in my hand. And I want you to pour some of that for yourself with one of those glasses.
My word.
So, out of Merc Life Balance or chip off the old bock, which one do you think it is that's been made up by me?
Chip off the old bock.
Are you locking that answer in?
No. I'm going with the other one.
You're going with Merc Life Balance?
Yeah, I know, but wouldn't Merc Pharmaceutical sue you for that? I don't know. Merc. Depends on how you...
Which one are you going for?
Merc
Life Balance, Merc made Life up by Balance. Me.
Yeah.
That's you made up should by you. Have stayed with your original one, because I've got Merc Life Balance in my hand right here again.
Okay, Merc, like M-U-R-C-K. What do these things mean?
So you got them both wrong, basically. So I'm the big winner here.
So you can tell what a massive beer drinker I am. Oh my God, I can't wait.
You're not a massive beer drinker, are you?
No, here, let's try.
Okay, so you're going to try... what's it called? Flavor by fermentation.
Flavor by fermentation.
Okay. Does it have the brewery on there where it's from? Does it say where it's from?
Science experiment. It just... I don't have my glasses, but... Discover flavor by nature. Okay, so it's a sustainable brand.
Ooh, perfect.
So that's a plus. Mm. The can is kind of coarse. Mm. I wonder if it's made from reclaimed metal or...
Yeah, could be.
Okay,
I want you to try that. I want you to tell me what you think and then rate it out of 10 for me. I'll try the Merc Life Balance while you do it.
It's not bad.
Yeah,
it's got a little citrus to it.
Okay, nice. So for a non-beer lover, really, are you okay with that?
Yeah.
What are you rating it out of 10?
I'd say this is a good 8.5.
That's high.
Yeah.
Fair play. Okay, I want you to try this one now, Andy. Merc Life Balance.
Merc Life Balance.
Absolutely. I'll do you a swapsies.
Okay, here we go. Let's see. I cannot believe these names.
I can't believe you got them both wrong.
I got them both wrong, and now I'm paying for it. Here we go. Merc Life Balance. The can is smooth. Very Art Deco.
I'll tell you what, that first one you had is citrus, isn't it? Oh. Jesus. Thoughts?
I like the first one better. Because I'm not a big beer drinker, I don't mind the... So we have a neighbor now in South Carolina. My partner and I recently moved down to Charleston from New York. And he drinks beer... And he pours grapefruit juice into the beer. Ever heard of it?
Yeah, I've heard of grapefruit-infused drinks, but I've not poured grapefruit in it myself.
And he swears by it.
Really?
Yeah, says it's fantastic. And he loves beer. He drinks a lot of it.
Fair play.
Okay, so Merc Life Balance is going to get a 7.5 for me.
7.5.
Down from an 8.5.
I mean, they're pretty high, to be fair, for a non-beer drinker. I'm happy with that.
I know, they're better than I thought.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice. I'm going to go 7 for both of them. How about that? Yeah. What do you normally drink?
Vodka.
Vodka? Mm-hmm. Straight or with a mixer?
So do you know... So over... Well, sometimes you'd call it a John Daly.
Okay.
Or we call it an Arnold Palmer.
Okay.
So it's half iced tea and half lemonade.
Ooh, I like
that. So it's iced tea, lemonade, a shot of vodka, and a lemon or a lime. And then if I'm feeling really sporty, I put a splash of orange juice just to give it a little citrusy blend. And if I'm feeling really crazy, you take mint and you muddle it, and then you shake that puppy up. So it's just iced tea, lemonade, vodka, and fresh mint.
Okay.
Oh my God, it's like a summer day in the on the beach in the middle of February. Yeah.
I like the sound of that.
It's really, really good. So vodka's kind of the go-to. Then I'm a rosé all day guy.
Okay, nice.
Not because I'm gay.
Sparkling.
Oh. No.
No.
No. Like the classic French rosé from Provence. The bubbly doesn't do me well.
No?
Yeah, the fizzy. No, I like just the regular old rosé.
See, I think things like champagne are great because you just get fucked on it. The bubbles go straight to your head. And yeah. I've said this before. I challenge you to have a glass of champagne without going, that's gone straight to my head. No one can ever do it. No one can ever do it.
I know. I wonder why it's a tradition. Like you arrive at a wedding.
Yep.
It's not even a ceremony yet. And everybody's drinking champagne. You're like, shit, you have one drink. You're like, woo, that bitch looks good. You're like, no, I'm gay. What was I thinking? I don't know. Why did I say that?
It's true though, isn't it? No matter what time of day, it gives you the worst breath and like the worst dry mouth ever. But fucking hell, everyone loves it, don't they?
Right.
Perfect.
I love a good little bottle of Veuve Clicquot.
What's that?
Veuve?
Yeah, not heard of that.
It's an orange-labeled champagne.
Nice, okay.
It's a French champagne, and it's owned by LVMH, you know, and they own...
Yeah, of course I know them, yeah.
Louis Vuitton, and they have a lot of beautiful, lovely brands.
Yeah, very expensive brands.
Uh-huh. And so Veuve became kind of a family champagne for us. We would drink it by the case.
Lovely.
Yeah, a little bit of a problem, yeah. Perfect. Not anymore. No. We backed that one down. Just the vodka now.
Spot on. Yeah. Well, now I've got some alcohol in your system. I'm going to ask you a multiple choice question, Andy.
Okay.
So out of these three scenarios, which would you pick? Take two with Andy King being the number one podcast in the world. Reorganizing Fyre Festival and it being a huge success. Or free Evian water, cheese sandwiches and holidays to the Bahamas for life.
Oh gosh,
what would you choose,
Connor?
What would you go for,
Andy? That is so unfair.
What would you go for?
Oh gosh, I would go for a new successful Fyre Festival.
Yeah, okay.
You know why?
Interesting, go on.
Because I could give fresh water and whatever they want to the Bahamas for the rest of their lives. If it's done properly, it'll be very lucrative, and it will be done properly.
Okay.
And secondly, I think that my team and my lawyers and my business consultants would be very proud of me because I've never really been able to kind of monetize what happened with Fyre and with the documentary properly. And this is the most logical step, is to make the announcement that there's going to be another Fyre Festival.
Wow.
And that it will trend high, you know, and that when the announcement is made, the press will follow it closely, but we're hoping to be able to do, you know, some kind of a docuseries. And at the end of the day, I want to be able to show the world, and who knows, it may happen, it may not happen, but I'd like to be able to show the world how to host an incredible music festival and make it as close to zero waste as possible.
Incredible.
And to be able to create vehicles like a Fyre Festival where we're able to host it in different communities around the world that need help, that need money, that need exposure, that need infrastructure, you know, and that's what's so important today is not, I don't want to point any fingers, you know, right now, but, you know, you and I discussed earlier about a music festival that had recently taken place here in the UK.
Of course, yeah.
Talking about embarrassing.
It happens all the time, every single year.
What the fuck does the world think about?
Every single year.
They leave their tent. They leave everything they brought with them on the ground. And, you know, it just can't keep happening. You know, we have to be able to get to a point where we're like proud of going to a huge event that is close to zero waste as possible. We're happy to see local farmers there serving local produce. We're happy to be supporting young aspiring chefs.
Yep.
We're happy to help emerging artists and musicians get to where they need to go. And that's all about spreading love and saving our planet and doing the right thing. And so I think hosting the next Fyre Festival is the right way to go.
Well, I mean, that's a pretty big news drop, to be fair, so I'll drink to that.
Cool.
Cheers.
Absolutely.
Well done, that sounds incredible.
Thank you.
And you'll make it happen, so Fantastic.
Well, we got to just get out of COVID. We can't make any announcements until we get this thing out of control.
You'll get out of there. You'll
Andy King
there.
Cannot be responsible for the world's biggest luxury spreader.
Imagine. Jesus.
That'll trend high.
That'll be fun, won't it? Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the perfect time for me now because I can just sit back and listen to you. So before you came on the podcast, I've asked you for your favorite drunk story. Andy, over to you. The floor is yours.
Oh my God, my favorite drunk story. Well, let me say, there's a place that I used to love to go every year. I would keep my sailboat down in the Caribbean, and we loved the island of St. Barts.
Okay.
So we would go every year at Christmas time, from Christmas to, if you rent a house there, it has to be 2 weeks. It never be 1 week. They know how to make money. And there's a few select restaurants in St. Barts that we love. One would be Nikki Beach, which half the world knows the Nikki Beaches, and there's one in Miami. I think there's one in Ibiza. There's one in Mykonos. The Nikki Beaches are amazing. Why are they amazing? The music is incredible, and they always have these fantastic DJs.
Okay.
And the party starts in the morning and goes all night long. It's crazy. There's another restaurant called La Plage where on the beach, and you would sit down for lunch at 12 o'clock, and by 2:30, you're dancing on the tables, and everybody is just, it's hysterical. And then there's another little restaurant called Le Petit Saint Bart, which is where people go for dinner, and we'd always go for New Year's Eve, where literally people are kicking glasses onto the floor as they're standing up on the table, screaming, and it's just a wild, wild scene, which I kept thinking happened all over the place, but you don't see that, probably from a liability perspective.
Yeah.
1 year, we decided to mix it up a little bit, and because I had read about this wonderful island called Mystique. I don't know if you know Mystique, Connor, but...
Not heard of it.
Mystique has a big English edge to it.
Okay.
The Brits love Mystique. And so it's the vacation home of Mick Jagger.
Okay, yep.
David Bowie, Princess Caroline.
Jesus Christ.
Tommy Hilfiger. There's a slew of, but there's probably only like 40 or 50 houses on the island. And there's a famous bar there called Basil's Bar.
Basil's Bar.
And Basil's is like, besides going to Foxy's, which is a beach bar on an island right next to Tortola in the British Virgin Islands, where we would go every year. And there'd be 1,000 boats there and 5,000 people dancing on the beach. It was totally outrageous. And Basil's Bar is a little more upscale, but totally, totally fun. So we rerouted 1 year and got 3 or 4 big yachts to go down. And I said, okay, everybody, I'm taking everybody to Basil's Bar for New Year's Eve.
Yeah.
And so we get down there and I say to my assistant, I think I had 2 or 3 of my assistants were on the cruise on one of the boats or a couple of the boats. So I say to, you know, and we'd been... anticipating, like, everybody, all had done for 2 weeks was say, we're all going to go have New Year's Eve at Basil's Bar. It's the fanciest thing you've ever seen. Yeah. Unbelievable. You're going to die. This is great. We get there. We come into the harbor. We anchor. And I say to my assistant, did you, you know, you made the reservation, right, for 24, whatever we were? And he's like, no, I didn't. I think, didn't Rebecca make it? I'm like, Rebecca, I didn't make it. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Oh my God, we came all this way. Half the guests have been throwing up. It's been stormy and windy, but we got these 4 yachts all the way there. So I said, Peter, you go ashore right now. Meanwhile, like sitting there, and I'm just pumping back the drinks. I was pretty bombed by that. And it was New Year's Eve day. And I just said, Peter, here. So I handed him $1,500. And I just said, you go and you make this happen. So of course he goes, you know, and I'm getting more drunk and more drunk.
Yeah.
And then he goes, meets with the maitre d', and he comes back to the boat. He said, Andy, you're set. You have your table. I said, okay, great. Because all anybody wanted to do, you know, was to sit at the table next to Mick Jagger, David Bowie, Princess Carol, you know, all the big celebrities are all going to be, you know, right there. So of course we go ashore, we sit down, and there's Mick and Bianca. It just was the best ever. And within like 10 minutes, they got up and left.
Oh, fuck off. Why?
And I'm like, are you? And at that point, I'm practically crawling on the ground. I was so drunk. I'm like, what is going on? And so the maitre d' said, oh, they're going to a private party.
No.
Across the island. They've been here for hours. I'm like, are you kidding me? And of course, you know, we all had a great, great time. It didn't really matter. And they came back. So we got to spend some time. Probably that's how I ended up hosting, you know, one of Rolling Stone's biggest concerts in the States.
But, so it was worth it. It was definitely
worth it. It was worth it. But yeah, you got to be careful. Sometimes you have a little too much to drink and you start throwing money around, or you start promising people things. But at the end of the day, I was able to deliver. Thank God.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I threw up for about 3 days after that.
Oh, shit. Mm-hmm. I think literally 95% of the stories that have been on here so far. So we're going to basically put it out to the followers at the end of the series, and they'll vote for their best drunk story. 95% of them involved, like, a lot of throwing up.
I feel like
a lot of throwing up is what makes a drunk story, to be honest. So I think it's a good one. I think it's a good one, Andy. Fair play to you.
Well, Connor, thank you.
No problem.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I've not told you about this one. I'm going to... this is a curveball.
Okay? Uh-oh.
So I ask every single podcast to go to the Erase in the Bar jukebox and choose one song and one song only to add to the list. If you're in a busy bar, the atmosphere's a bit shit, what song are you going to put on to get everyone up there dancing?
Oh my gosh.
It's really difficult because you know, sometimes a song comes on, you're like, this is the one I'd do, this is my karaoke song. Someone asks you, it's like, fucking hell, what was that song?
Well, see, I would put on Joe Cocker's Feeling All Right.
Okay, so I don't know that, I don't think.
You don't?
I don't.
Can you play it?
Can you play it?
Can you pull it up?
Get it up.
Yeah.
Is it one of those ones that I will know?
You will, I think. Yeah. I don't know if you recognized it. Because if it's not that, I'm going to ask you to pull up the song that we finally heard. I have been trying to track one Get Up and Go song that we get people dancing at a club. What's the song, Craig, that it keeps coming on where they make the noises of monkeys or monsters? Or it came up before that. And I always said, oh... In the 90s, we would, you know, my family has a house in the Greek islands on a little island called Patmos, and there's a couple clubs there. And Patmos is 12 hours from Piraeus, so it's very close to the Turkish coast. It's far, far away. Not a lot of cars there, whatever. And there's a couple of clubs. And you basically go and you have dinner at 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and then you go to the club until 5 in the morning, and then you eat crepes and you watch the sunrise. Black Legend.
Okay.
And what's it called?
Nice.
You See the Trouble With Me from Black Legend.
Black Legend, You See the Trouble With Me. That's Andy King's playlist.
I wonder if he's still alive. We get him to play at the next Fire Festival.
Like
everybody will run for the doors. Like, what the hell's going on here? Where is Blink-182?
I would not run for the doors if that came on. I'd be running to the stage without a doubt.
It's pretty cool.
Incredible. Fantastic. Well, we're coming up to the last part of the podcast, but have you got a favorite bar, pub, or nightclub in the UK, in the world, that you can nominate as your number one place that you've been?
Well, being an old guy.
Mm-hmm. Only as old as you feel, but you feel old at the moment.
Yeah, thanks.
So.
Getting a little prickly at the moment, yeah. There is nothing like Harry's Bar in Venice, Italy.
Okay, nice.
Oh, yeah.
Very nice.
And Harry's is, it's first of all, it is stunning, beautiful people, amazing food, great drinks. The best truffle risotto you've ever had in your life.
I love truffle. Anything with truffle.
Oh, my God. You've got to go in October in truffle season. But nice. Harry's Bar. So I think I brought we brought my cousin there for her 40th birthday. Mm. I think we brought another cousin of ours there for his 50th. Mm. It's just a classic, great, stunning, wonderful. It's not, I guess it can get wild. Maybe at a Sunday brunch or maybe at a late night. I don't know. But generally speaking, Harry's Bar and Grill. Harry's Bar.
Okay.
Venice, Italy. That's
best
the
place
bar.
In the world.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
Let's go to the bar.
Andy, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I mean, I'm keeping my eye out because the Fire Festival is happening. It's happening. So.
Absolutely. Incredible. Keep your ear to the ground. Be surprised.
Absolutely.
But, you know, nothing's being mentioned yet, that's for sure. We've got a lot of work to do. We're doing a lot of work right now on it, for sure. But that we gotta make good by it.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And why not? If the, we need to give the world something positive to talk about.
Indeed.
And there was certainly so much negative things to talk about fire. Why not? What do we say? Flip the script.
Mm.
Flip the script and make fire like, oh my gosh, did you hear how amazing that was? But
it'll
at the end of the day,
it'll happen.
As close to zero waste as possible and leaving a positive footprint in the world.
Amen to that.
Should be.
Amen to that.
Well, Connor, thanks for having me.
No, thank you so much for coming on. And yeah, we'll be joined by a new podcast guest next week. Andy, thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.